It's Wednesday and time for a weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is Kevin Wooster, Rapid City reporter for KELO-TV. And Kevin, thanks for coming on the program today.
Hey, it's great to be back.
Also with us on the line is John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And John, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, yesterday, President Obama vetoed the bill approving construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, and South Dakota's congressional delegation criticized the veto. For example, Senator John Thune said it was disappointing but not surprising. If built, the pipeline will cut diagonally across the western half of South Dakota. And Kevin, I'll start with you. What has been the reaction to the veto in the Rapid City area?
I think it's the reaction that Senator Thune expressed, perhaps not surprising. I don't know how disappointing it was. You know, there's some other issues here that I think people are a little bit more focused on, but this one is one with great political significance. I guess the question is how much other significance it has. But it seems consistent, and for reasons beyond just the issue itself, which is I think the president or his people might argue that this is a process of veto, that they should lead this to the State Department, not take it upon themselves as legislators to do this. So not a surprise here.
Other pipelines have been built, including the Keystone One in the eastern part of South Dakota. John, why do you think the Keystone XL pipeline has been so controversial?
Well, I wonder that myself sometimes, because the first Keystone One went through kind of smoothly. There was a little bit of protest, but nothing at all like this second one. On the other hand, the issues that this thing faces has to do with kind of big environmental stuff, kind of oil versus non-oil, and so this is really more a symptom of that fight. And you know, it's a little bit like the transmission that they had from Milbank to Minneapolis, the big transmission lines. So we were trying to put together, people in South Dakota are trying to put together a second coal plant at Milbank, and so they said, well, the way to defeat that is to essentially defeat the transmission, because if you don't have the transmission, you can't do that. So I think some people say if you don't build the Keystone pipeline, then you know, we'll stop drilling the tar sands or whatever for oil. So I think it's a bigger picture that this ends up being a focal point for people who argue this sort of thing.
Well, with all of the politics going on regarding the Keystone XL pipeline, has there been much, I guess you'd call it, reasoned debate over the pros and cons of building the XL pipeline, or some of this, or has a lot been buried, or things that haven't been discussed, or the reasoned debate just isn't taking place, Kevin?
I haven't seen a lot of reasoned debate at the real emotional public level that this has existed at. And you know, some of it has to do with presidential politics and back and forth between Republicans and Democrats. Some of it has to do, as John said, with that whole global warming issue and the tar sands issue. I think some of it has to do with the pipeline East River. And when you come West River, things get a little more complicated sometimes. And landowners here are a little bit more independent, a little bit more suspicious. I think the tribes out here are certainly more reactive to those kinds of things. You're crossing their territory anytime West River, as far as they're concerned, and going back to treaty days, and I think they're very sensitive to that. And I think it takes a while for some of these things to become really purely political. And the arguments are that it'll be an environmental catastrophe like we've never seen in our lifetimes, and on the other side, that it's going to be a jobs bill and a national security bill that is essential to us. And, you know, of course, the truth lies somewhere in between.
John, what happens next? Does the process just continue?
Well, yeah, that's a good question also. The veto essentially pushes it back to Congress, and so they have a choice whether they want to try to override that veto. And again, even getting things up for votes in Congress are hard, whether they'll schedule it and so on. So I think at the moment, I think the supporters would be trying to round up votes to override that veto, and opponents would be trying to prevent that from happening. But I want to follow up a little bit on Kevin's thing, too, is there are a couple of things. The jobs, the numbers have been highly disputed. Some people say, thousands and thousands of jobs. Other people say, just a few permanent jobs and so forth. There's also the issue when the grain cars were backed up so much in recent years for crops, then some were blaming all the oil and saying this is going to help farmers because the oil is not going to be on the train cars anymore, and you can easily and effectively and affordably ship your grain. So there are some issues that are kind of out there that probably are relevant, but the opponents and supporters are far from agreeing on them.
Well, moving to the state legislature, lawmakers are still struggling with transportation funding. The House State Affairs Committee killed its version of a transportation package that would have raised about $50 million in its first year. Instead, lawmakers will take up a more modest Senate proposal. Kevin, why do you think it is that the lawmakers are having problems finishing up a final transportation bill?
Well, we're talking about raising taxes, and we might be talking about raising taxes a fair bit for a fairly long time, depending on what they come up with. And it makes sense to me on an issue like this that you would take your time and try and hear from all sides and try and look at how much money you need and how much money you think you're going to need over, you know, the near term and maybe the long term, and then try and fit that into a formula of a tax increase that lasts a certain amount of time and is a certain size. And that's not an easy thing to do, especially as they're trying to judge where the economy's going now and the impacts it'll have on people. So this is an issue that I would have expected to go right down to the end of the session before it's really settled.
And John Hunter, do you agree that this is something that you really think would take till the final days?
Yes. The lobbyists are in full force on this one, and I think there's a little bit of surprise on the number of different constituents who kind of come into this in this issue. Certainly you would have expected those who are going to be taxed to do this, but there appear to be others who are associated with that too. So it is one of those things where it's pretty rare in fact I can't think of any others when Governor Dugard has proposed raising taxes, and I think in some cases people would say, well, this is our chance to raise the taxes, and so let's go for it. And other people say, no, let's be modest, and so on. But I would guess the governor's proposal is, by and large, is where that's going to end up, rather than the House or Senate versions.
The legislature has killed some six concealed weapons bills. There was one that would have allowed students on public university campuses to carry concealed weapons, another that would allow legislators to carry concealed firearms in the state capitol. Kevin, are you surprised to see that these bills didn't really go anywhere?
I'm really not. I think, you know, we tend to be a pro-gun state, but these kinds of issues, I think, we are a little uncomfortable with, generally speaking. I know most legislators that I have been aware of and covered over the years have the idea of carrying a concealed weapon in the Capitol. It's a little disconcerting to most of us. And maybe there's no reason it should be, but you think, well, wait a minute. And if I were running for office, what I just said would mean I would be labeled anti-Second Amendment, and people would be sending postcards telling them I was a hateful gun hater. But I think that is just, there are places where we're comfortable with guns and places we're not, even in a state like South Dakota, and I think that's what you're seeing in these votes.
John Hunter, your thoughts?
What about guns in newsrooms, Kevin? I don't know.
I think there should be more guns in newsrooms, but only by reporters. Editors should be unarmed.
What about publishers? I think unarmed in that case.
Okay.
So, yeah, I agree with what Kevin is describing. You know, we tend to be pro-gun, but I think it's not intended to be to go all the way, I think, in this, that there are places we're uncomfortable with it. But yeah, I think these will continue to get negotiated, and there may be some things. You know, I don't even think we have metal detectors at the Capitol at the moment. So, I mean, there are some other measures that I think might do some things. But the kind of wide open everybody carrying guns, I think, is not going to happen.
The House Judiciary Committee has approved a measure blocking state employees or officers who leave the government from entering most contracts of the state agency for a year after leaving their jobs or offices. The measure is in response to concerns surrounding the EB-5 visa program, which was a part of a lot of controversy last year. Kevin, do you think this measure fixes some of the problems that came to light with that scandal?
Well, it's certainly one issue. You know, there's still things out there, and I'm sure the Democrats aren't done with this, and there's still a question of, is there going to be anything coming from the feds in terms of a further investigation on this, or confirmation that it was looked into beyond what we already know. So it's not over. I think this is a step that probably was necessary based on what we found out through the reporting and the revelations that came on all this. And I would guess we'll see some more activity on this.
John, do you think there'll be more activity beyond this bill that connected with the EB-5 scandal?
Probably. This is a pretty small step, in my opinion, for changing that. And ultimately, to do what supporters want to do, it takes a culture of honesty and so forth, which, you know, by and large, I think we have. There was this issue, and there may be other issues that we're not aware of. But that's the thing, is that everyone has to kind of agree that they're going to be honorable in these things. This is so there may be other ones as we discover other scandals or whatever other problems there are. But this is not going to change the direction of a big tanker just in one bill.
The Common Core education standards have been discussed quite a bit over the past few legislative sessions, and attempts to end those standards in South Dakota have failed in the legislature. John, do you think opponents will continue to fight those standards?
Yes, I do. I don't know how long that goes on. You know, I think at some point you run out of gas, or you move to another education issue and so forth. But yes, I do think they'll continue for a while, and not just in South Dakota, but in other states as well. So I think this will last for a fair time.
Kevin, do you see this continuing for a while yet?
I certainly see it continuing by a small group, that's pretty well organized and very committed. And if they run out of gas, they're not showing signs of it yet, because this is a calling to them, I think, and it goes well beyond just the standards of education. It goes into politics and religion and what they see as a takeover of young minds. And I just don't think most people, including the people in the power positions in the state of government, are buying into that.
So as long as Governor Dugard supports this, it'll stay. That the people that are the opponents will have difficulty fighting it.
I think it's pretty hard, and I think the majority of the Republican Party, the mainstream or the power structure that exists in the state, hasn't bought into this either. So it's a little bit of a fringe issue, and I hate to call that the label of that, but I don't think it's anything that's grabbing into the core of South Dakota. No pun intended.
As Keely Bultina reported, today is a crossover day in the state legislature, the last chance for a bill started in one chamber to gain approval and be up for consideration by the other side. If that doesn't happen, the measures die. Kevin, how significant is crossover day? Is this an important day in the legislature?
Well, it's less significant for me now that I'm not out there covering it, because it can be a pretty confusing, really grinding day when they're trying to get a lot of work done. They have ouch, there's the old saying in the legislature is you can do anything you feel like at any time if you got two-thirds, so they can suspend rules for bills if they want to, and of course you can bring up a bill in a hoghouse process or anything later on if you have two-thirds. But it is important. It's an important day, and it kind of gives you a gauge on how the session is flowing and how the certain bills are faring, and it's also a reminder to lawmakers to get going, because the final stretch run's coming.
Well, John, how do you think the session has been flowing so far?
Well, I think I don't think there's anything particularly out of the ordinary. They had a few big things to focus on, and I think they've done that. as Kevin indicates, it's never over till it's over. So some, you know, you can add amendments and things get can changed in the conference committees, and there's all sorts of places. So yes, it's an important day, the crossover, but lots of things can still happen. The other thing too, I think it's gets when it gets right down to crunch time, it all seems to point to the Appropriations Committee. You know, there are a number of bills in there that were passed that have a $1 funding mechanism attached to that. So, you know, appropriations does a lot of work the whole session, and they're going to do a lot of work down the stretch too. So, it's symbolically it starts pointing everything to appropriations.
And Kevin, with 2 weeks to go, do you expect any surprises? I don't know if you can actually expect surprises. I guess that's.
Kevin could.
I'm easily surprised because I'm often underinformed, so I could probably be surprised. And I think John touches on something. It seems like there's almost always something that comes out of appropriations that has a bigger impact than you might expect. You know, those folks kind of for much of the session are in their committee room working on the numbers crunching, and in my experience over the years, they're very committed to that, and dollars matter to them, and management of budget matters a lot. And often you end up with a bill that you didn't expect or an issue that you didn't expect tied to a money issue. And it may not even be a huge amount of money, but that's where surprises often come for me, is something I just missed in the budget part of the process.
So, John, the final work of the legislature is always or almost always gets down to the budget, and that's where the transportation bill will fit in as well?
Yeah, I think so, yes. That one probably will be a little bit decided outside that process, but there are plenty others. And, yeah, almost everything else ends up being affected by the budget. So I think that all the attention, or a lot of the attention, will focus on that down the stretch.
Well, we'll move to a Rapid City issue here. Coming up in a couple of weeks on March 10th, voters in Rapid City will vote on a proposed $180 million expansion of the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center. The current mayor, Sam Quaker, approves the expansion, and over the past couple of weeks, several former mayors are against it. Kevin, what's going on there? Why are former mayors opposed to the expansion?
Well, it's a real interesting race, and you've got five former mayors that came into it in opposition, and I think their summary of their opposition is it's too big, it costs too much, and it's too risky. And they want a smaller version. They want to deal with the Americans with Disabilities Act needs and not expand quite to the length and the expense that we're looking at. They're concerned that $180 million project over 30 years could be $400 million, depending on what bond rates, although the proponents say it would likely be less than that. And they're going to have a issue today, a news release, that thank heavens they've moved indoors, or a press conference followed by a news release on parking issues, and that's a concern over there too, because some people think there's already a parking crunch, and this could add to it. So we'll see. We'll see what the latest on the parking thing is. But I might say it might have a tough time passing. Things can change, but this is a community that's cautious about spending its money, and the pro people have a ways to go yet, I think, to win this thing.
Is this the way it seemed it was going to end up, that there would be this close, that the pro people would have a more difficult time to convince Rapid City voters that they should pass this?
Yeah, you know, I guess initially when you've got all the excitement about the proposal and they've gone through a long period of time studying it and looked at options, and it comes out of the city council, and then it goes to a public vote, and the public vote was just, should we vote on the city council's approval of this, of the bonding and everything for this? So I think then when you get down to the campaign, that's when things really start to emerge, and that's when you've seen people come out, including the former mayors, in an organized way, and I think that's when you really see the issues come. It's almost like the legislature. You know, you get down near the crunch time, and people say, well, I better get involved, or I better bring this up, and so I expect a lot of activity in the next couple of weeks, and I'd have trouble at this time calling the election.
All right. Well, that'll have to do it. We'll have to call the Dakota Political Junkies for this week. Kevin, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us this week.
Good to be here, Carl.
And John, thanks for your time as well.
Thanks, Carl.